The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Very good. Well, welcome to our fifth session on the Dharma life, moving on through the major training areas. We'll look at wisdom and insight today. But first, we wanted to ask about how your practice is going, how it went with the suggested readings and reflections over the last week. So you had that Chaitanya Sutta that talked about the naturalness of the unfolding from ethical conduct through the five different, the gladness pentad, if you would, all the way up through awakening. And then also the handout on the conditions for samadhi, quote unquote conditions, based on what comes before it in other lists, kind of a general way to think about the things that precede the development of samadhi. I'm curious if anybody has any questions or reflections about that material from last week. Sheila. You're still muted.
Okay.
There.
So I have two comments. I loved the poem. I think because it speaks to a place that is sort of out of time, right? For no particular reason. Right, both of those, and that we cannot always explain in rational terms, you know, in sort of the linear terms that we normally are in that sort of normal mode of thinking. So that's what that poem drew out of me. And for the samadhi sutra, right? The different levels I relate to as in practice, in meditation practice, in jhana practice. Not so much, I think to some extent in everyday life, you know, our study, but mostly in sitting practice, in jhana practice.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
And I relate to that, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, one of the great things about these teachings, and sort of like great poetry, is that it unfolds at multiple levels, right? And yeah. There can be, you know, something that we can understand in our daily life about our rational mind and letting go of that. And also, you know, all the way sitting on the cushion in deep meditation, we see that the same principles are unfolding, maybe just in a slightly different way. And the art of the Dharma is that it can capture all of that kind of different levels. So I really appreciate your identifying that.
Thank you.
Anita.
I really liked your reflection about considering the naturalness, and I definitely feel that it does naturally unfold. But I wondered about, is there a distinct flavor between this difference in flavor between like gladness and joy and tranquility? I mean, they all seem to mesh together.
Yeah.
So if you could comment on that, please.
Looks like Diana has something to say on that.
I have this analogy that I use to kind of one way that I think about it. And we could say gladness is when maybe you've been out for a walk and it's been a nice walk, and maybe you come back home and you have a glass of water and you are thirsty, but not super thirsty, but that water is like, oh yeah, that was nice. Kind of a refreshing. And then joy is a little bit like, wahoo, let's celebrate. And it's drinking champagne, has that bubbly feeling, a celebratory feeling. It's kind of energetic and uplifting. And maybe happiness is more like drinking hot chocolate, like, cozy, and the sense of contentment and well-being. And, you know, so these are some of the one ways we can understand the difference. And then maybe I'll say tranquility is often associated with the body too, is has kind of with the body is kind of like settled down. So, and yeah, maybe I'll just, so I offer that as different ways to think about it. And maybe the last thing I'll say, you know, we can tease them apart this way. And when is it maybe not so helpful to tease apart? Maybe sometimes it's just helpful to think, feel like, okay, there's a general sense of well-being or okayness or something like that. So that's maybe part of the art of practice as well, is when to tease them apart and when not to. Be worried about the details. I don't know, maybe Kim, do you have something you'd like to add?
No, that's great. That's beautiful.
So if it's okayness, I feel most of the time, it's okay to just let that be. Maybe the distinction will come later with more practice. Okay, thank you.
Maybe it'll arise when it's useful for it to arise. Yeah. Yang Kui.
So in terms of the naturalness, something I've been practicing is doing like the seven factors of awakening and choosing one factor per day. And what I've discovered actually is it's the sense that it's there. If I just, I'm practicing equanimity. Oh, equanimity now. And like, it's just, when I remember, recall it, it's actually just there. But if I don't recall it, I don't think about that in that moment, you know, it's like I'm not disconnected to it. And with samadhi, it's about not being distracted. When I say samadhi present, you know, so during the day, I'll just say samadhi, you know, from time to time. Like samadhi, oh, I'm distracted. Oh, it's just that, like in the everyday life. And so it makes me think it is. Those qualities may be things that we do have, like inhabit. It's more like shining light on them, and maybe more and more. Well, I don't know if you guys could comment more about that, but that's
yeah.
Kind of a practice for me to do.
That was beautifully said. I mean, so often we have access to them, but we don't remember that we do, essentially. And so maybe just a couple things I'll say. One is that, yes, when we shine the light on them of mindfulness, we could say, it has a way of enhancing, when we are mindful of wholesome qualities, it enhances them and supports them. And when we're mindful of unwholesome qualities, it diminishes them and starves them, whereas they can sort of continue to fester and grow if we're not aware of them. So it's sort of a magic quality of mindfulness, which is nice. And then in addition, this points toward the usefulness of study, of knowing the lists and the different qualities, knowing what you should look for in the mind instead of just having this kind of general wash of experience. If you know that you're looking for the seven factors of awakening, those will be strengthened. And according to, you know, the teachings of the Buddha, these are particular qualities of mind that are useful to have. And so this is a way in which our intellectual understanding can start to inform the development of the heart. Maybe Diana has something more to add. No. Okay. Anyway. Thanks for your observation. That's very beautiful. We have time for another one, if there is.
Okay, so then maybe I'll make one little comment then on what Yang Kuei had to say. I've been just amazed how just inclining the mind in certain directions, how powerful that can be. Especially after, if we have a meditation practice, we're kind of have some familiarity with our minds or the way the mind works or something like this. Just this gentle inclining the mind is one, it's for me, it's astounding sometimes. So what can happen by just by doing that? And I just want to reiterate something that you said, Yang Kuei. There's something about when things just arise naturally, just to notice, oh, it's here. I think more and more that we kind of bathe in that experience, whether it's equanimity, investigation, samadhi, tranquility, whatever it is, the more familiarity the mind and the body have with it, then the more likely, if we just incline the mind that direction, then there's access to it. So these types of practices during daily life can be a real support for our practice on the cushion.
Great. Well,
if I could just say,
go ahead.
It gives me confidence that these factors are there. I'm kind of surprised by the fact that they're there. I thought something you had to cultivate and work really hard to like bring to your mind state. But then in everyday life practice, seems like if I just notice, well, if I'm practicing joy today, then randomly throughout the day, is there joy here? I'm like, oh, yeah, there is. I'm just really surprised by that discovery. Like, yeah, that's really cool.
Nice.
I know we move on, but I just wanted to say, because this is my second time taking this class with you, you know, in quick succession. And when we did this last time, it's been so fruitful to notice, to be like you just said, oh, it's here. And to, when I feel something, like in December, I was sitting there and I was feeling something, and it was so odd to me that I immediately wanted to move away from it. But then I took another beat and I went, whoa, what is this? And I went, oh my gosh, this is contentment. And it was, since I am not in the habit of noticing or haven't been in my whole life, when that's present, my mind said, oh, you need to be busy and start doing something. But because of this class or this notice, I went, wait, let me see what it is. And it was actually a beautiful feeling. But my mind was telling me that I needed to do something besides just sit and go, oh my gosh, I'm content right now. Oh. And just inclining the mind and starting to notice. Now when that feeling arises, I go, oh, I'm content. I'm looking at my son and this feeling is contentment. Oh, there it is again. And then you just, it starts. So I just wanted to validate that it's so true, Diana. It just, you start noticing and it's beautiful. And I, so thank you.
Thank you, Morgan. Thank you. So with that, maybe we'll head on to what we're covering today, which is to move into, you notice in the Chaitanya Sutta that samadhi is somewhere in the middle, and there's some things that flow on after that. So, you know, passing through this realm of the happiness and the concentration, we move on to the ability to see clearly, and that moves into insight and wisdom. And so that's, you know, what the topic that we'll be in. But maybe I'll just say also that you notice in that sutta, the way it says naturalness, when there's this, there will be this. And when there's that, there will be that. And it goes on. There's actually just this flow of conditions that are supporting each other and unfolding. And it doesn't ever say that there's a self there doing all of that or in charge of all of that. And so we'll also be touching into this. This is an aspect of wisdom, particularly be touching into anatta and to some degree dukkha today as part of the three characteristics. So with that, let Diana guide us.
Thank you. Thank you, Cam. Yeah, as we started to say earlier that part of the beauty, for me, I'll use this word beauty, of the Dharma is its depth. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Is it just seems like it doesn't matter how many times you take the same class, or it doesn't matter how many times you read the same sutta. There's feels like there's a freshness there. Like there's something new to be learned, and there's something, a different understanding or a subtlety or something like this that really can come alive. So this is part of why Kim and I love to teach these classes and why we read the suttas, is just this recognition of the richness there. And maybe I will point to in particular, probably all of us have this experience that our relationship or our understanding of dukkha has changed since the very beginning when we first encountered the Dharma, that maybe the more we practice, maybe we start to understand that maybe initially we were thinking that dukkha was just about these untenable life situations we find ourselves in, our jobs or relationships or physical pain or something like this. But as we start to practice more and read the suttas more and have more familiarity, and as the mind starts to recognize, as Morgan said, contentment or tranquility or some equanimity, then in comparison, like in highlight, we start to see, oh, this feels like dukkha too. Not the what was still, but things that are maybe just a little bit of agitation where in the past we wouldn't have thought that was dukkha at all. We start to realize, oh, this feels like dukkha compared to some of the quietness I've experienced sitting, or some of the contentment, happiness, equanimity I have felt at other times. So one way that we might understand dukkha, there's lots of different ways we can, but one way might be to feel it kind of like as a constriction, a tightening. I can't help but my shoulders go up. I kind of like I'm holding my fingers in this constricted way. So there's a way in which, like in the mind and the body, it feels like a tightening, a small, maybe a little bit of stuckness, as opposed to broad, expansive. Use this kind of language to talk about dukkha. And then we might think about, well, practice is about loosening these constrictions, this so that we can have more of a sense of spaciousness, a sense of ease. Because within that spaciousness and ease, there's more of a sense of opportunity or possibility or freedom, right? Kind of a lack of freedom is feeling stuck, like there's nowhere else to go, there's nothing else to do. This just stuck here. So our practice can be about noticing when this constriction is present. Understand how does this constriction get there? What are the conditions that support it? And what are the conditions that loosen it? And I'm using this word constriction, but we could also use the word dukkha. But I want to point to something that's more subtle, a more subtle version of our understanding of dukkha. And in particular, I want to talk about what does it feel like when there is a strong sense of self? That is, I'm here and I'm separate and distinct and everybody, everything else is there. It's clearly that I'm here and everybody else is there. And on some level, of course, that's true, right? I'm not going to say that there's no boundaries between us or anything like that. I'm talking about our sense of self, the feeling of, oh, yeah, I'm here, and feeling maybe a little stuck or constricted. And often a place when we feel that is when we feel threatened, or when we feel that something isn't right, when we've made a mistake, or somebody has harmed us. These are places often where the sense of self really gets strong, and often, not 100% of the time, but often the response to this is we turn towards blame. We blame ourselves, we blame others. What's responsible for this? They have to stop it. They have to fix it. They have to make it go away, whatever this is. So there's this exaggerated, inflexible sense of self, a kind of me and a you, when fallen into an us versus them mode of thinking. This and this has this kind of encrusted negative views are associated with this. And it creates this dukkha cycle that when we are really constricted and having a sense of being stuck, then the way that we can view things is also constricted. And in that way, there's often we can't see a way forward, or we can't find any ease or see any comfort or a way out that isn't about blame. So I'd like to offer a way that we can work with this when we find this arising. This is a human experience that we have this. And one is to review, look again, or to analyze. It can be different ways to better understand the conditions that supported the experience. What are the elements that are helped this to arise? What are all the different pieces to this puzzle of how I find at this moment I'm feeling constricted with a sense of dukkha, blaming others, blaming myself? And we're doing this in the service of compassion. This is a more open, a more heartfelt place where we can find our way forward. And of course, there are so many conditions that come together to create any situation. And I would like to offer a way that through an example. And I'm borrowing this from Rob Berbea. Some of you may be familiar with his teachings, and this comes from his book, Seeing That Freeze. So here's an example. Suppose that you're with a friend and she's telling you of some difficulty that she's going through, and you're listening attentively and sympathetically as you can, but then you notice that you're not quite as connected with your friend. And you're aware of some disquiet within yourself, and you have this worry of, wow, I should really be having more compassion. I should be a little bit more, have more empathy, more connected. But somehow you find that you're not really moved or touched by what your friend is telling you. And later this bothers you and you feel a little bit troubled, and you even wonder, is there something wrong with you? And maybe you think, you know, the inner critic arises, blaming yourself, saying, well, maybe I'm not a good friend. Maybe my capacity for empathy isn't very good. And maybe I'm just a cold-hearted person. So this way of looking, of viewing, the interpreting the situation, focusing only on yourself, focusing only on how you are responsible for how things went, fails to see all the other factors that are playing there. Like, assumes that you are completely responsible and have control over things, and it's all about what you have to say. But maybe this kind of unfulfilled or this lack of connection have been something as basic as you were having a headache, or maybe you were tired, or maybe it's due to something a little bit more complex. Maybe the last time you were with your friend, there was some slight tension between you that was left unresolved. And somehow you're remembering this again. It might be something small, and at the time you judged it insignificant, but now it's raising itself. You're noticing this. Or maybe there's something in the way that your friend herself was relating to her story. Maybe she was disconnected from the story. So she was telling it to you in a way that kind of lacked a certain amount of emotion, and it felt more just like a retelling of a movie she saw or something, you know, something other than, so she didn't feel connected to it. She was holding back in some kind of way. She was offhand, or maybe it was the opposite. Maybe she was hamming it up and exaggerating and as a way to kind of like be disconnected from it. We don't know exactly what it was, but the point is that it's not only about us and our taking full responsibility. Maybe it was really loud in the location where she was at, and you were having a hard time and you were really straining to hear. So there's a way in which we can unpack when we find ourselves stuck in dukkha, in constriction, and in blaming. I'm going to offer blaming as a really rich place to explore this, because this is when there's a strong sense of self, myself, yourself. Is we can use this a particular structure in which we can do this, that is inner and outer, and past and present. An example is present inner. What are some of the states of minds that we have? Or what are some of the beliefs or perceptions that we have? And we'll send you a document that lays this out so you don't feel like you have to capture it all right now. But an example that I gave above, tiredness, would be like a present inner condition. Maybe a present outer condition. There's a manner maybe in which she was speaking. Maybe she was not connected to it, or she was exaggerating, or it was, I don't know. There's so many. And like I said, maybe present outer is maybe it was really loud in the location where you guys were talking, or something like this, so it was hard to hear, or you felt exhausted by straining. Or maybe the cell phone connection is really bad, or the Zoom connection was really bad. Maybe there's past inner. Maybe the feelings left over from an earlier meeting you had with this friend. Or maybe there's past outer, this external impressions that we have, that are influences from our history, that maybe we had somebody in our life that was always crossing boundaries for us and using us just to vent with, but it wasn't a good friend for us. So now maybe this past outer, we get a little unsure or uncomfortable in some kind of way. So this is all pointing to, there's lots of conditions that come together for everything. And we know this, right? As Dharma practitioners, we know this. But here's a way that we can maybe use this as a tool in our life, in our Dharma life, that we can review, we can analyze, we can look at again. And this can be done at the moment, or it can be done a week later, a month later, a year later, doesn't matter. Just to see things as a confluence of conditions. And we could use this framework, inner, outer, past, present, to help us look at what are some of the conditions that maybe weren't obvious to us at the time. And this can help us to loosen up any reified or solidified sense of me that's solid and is kind of stuck and has dukkha with this. So any sense of me and you, and instead start to see like, oh yeah, all these conditions came together. So with that as a teaching, I'm talking about this, I'll turn it over to Kim, who will give you guys an opportunity to explore this some more.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. So we'll have some breakout rooms now, and the topic that we'd like you to explore is very much related to what Diana was just talking about, and that is, how does it feel when we are seeing things in terms of a confluence of conditions, like she described, instead of a solid sense of self? How does it feel when we see things in terms of conditions instead of in terms of the self? And just to give some ideas of dimensions that might be relevant for this, you could consider breadth of awareness, flexibility, like how supple your mind is, creativity, ability to flow with minor upsets. How do all of those things relate to whether you're seeing things as conditions or whether you're seeing things in terms of a sense of self? And the way we can do it is just in the group, maybe each person could, because there's a lot of things, sort of ideas to offer about this. One person could say just one thing, not everything that you can think of about that. And then the next person could say something and so on, and it will go around. And then get back to the first person and you can offer something else. And it's not that, you know, you need to, what you're doing together is assembling kind of a big set of conditions, a big set of feelings of around this topic. And if somebody else says what you were going to say, that's great. It just got included. So you can now say something else. So just keep going around and you'll have maybe about 12 minutes. And the person, just so it's easy to know where to start, the person who has the longest hair can begin first. So we'll see you guys after that. Enjoy. Okay, so welcome back. And as usual, we would love to hear any comments or shared wisdom from your conversations, anything that came out or anything that was surprising or interesting, confusing. Yeah, just to bring us back together as a big group. Claire.
I guess I'll go. The thing that we kept, I mean, it was cool doing, being able to kind of go around a few times because it helped us really build on what we were saying, but we kept on circling back to this same topic or same theme, which is like not taking things so personally or taking things personally, which causes suffering and makes it harder to see the conditions that led to where we are. And when we can depersonalize and see that we're just kind of a link in a chain, it can help us see how we've gotten to where we are. And not to say that we aren't responsible for our actions, but being able to see where we are at, you know, the causes and conditions, it helps us to realize we're not the only ones and there's a bigger, bigger picture out there.
Great. Yeah. It can feel repetitive sometimes to discover not self, because the self is so repetitive, isn't it? It's always the same issue. There's a saying in the Lojong trainings, that's the Zen mental trainings, that say, drive all blames into one. And since we're talking on blame, and the one blame that you drive to is the blame on seeing things in terms of a self. And that's always always a key issue. Worry.
Hi. I just wanted to ask something because the conversation that we had made me realize, I think, for me, seeing things as conditions is, it feels very restricting and not liberating at all. It's like, these are the conditions, deal with it. You can accept them or you can suffer more by not accepting. That's the only thing. And the self seems like, okay, I can always work on the self. I can improve the self. So, but with the conditions, you know, especially, you know, mortality, it just seems like something closing in on us.
Okay. So what I hear in that is that conditions feels a little bit deterministic. Would that be a correct interpretation? You know, there's just this and then it's going to flow into that and there's sort of no choice. Is that right?
It's not about... I don't know if it's totally deterministic, but I know that it's just, I don't know, it feels like things that happened in the past, there's no way to alter them. Now you have to deal with the consequences, which is true, I guess. There's no way, but I'm just wondering why when the Buddha, I know, when he discovered these things, he was so liberated by them. I'm like, I don't want to know this.
Okay, well, my guess is Diana might have something to say on this too, but I'll offer one angle on this, which is that there are kind of different ways that conditions flow. One is that they can flow around and around in the dependent origination chain, if you will. So we have something, some kind of ignorance we're not seeing clearly, so we create our understanding around that. We take things in, we react to them, we create a self, and then something happens to that. And it's like sort of just goes around and around and around. But there's this other one that Stephen put in the chat about conditions can flow in a direction that kind of spirals up out of that circular, endless, cyclic kind of thing. There are conditions that are called the path that will lead to an expansion of the mind, to a freeing of the heart, all the way to a realization of something that is outside the conditions, which is actually where the liberation lies. So in a sense, getting disenchanted with conditions is part of the process. That's a lot of Dharma packed into a very short summary, but I think you're onto something, Ori. So maybe Diana has something to add.
Maybe I'll just say something, just throw a little bit more Dharma on here. And that is, when we're noticing our experience, whatever it is, whether it's like that little scenario where the friend, we're not really connecting with our friend or whatever it is, why is it that we're focusing on the way that we didn't feel really connected to what our friend was saying? Why don't we, because there's lots of things happening at the same time. Why aren't we remembering how the coffee tasted if we were having coffee with our friend? Why aren't we remembering the pressure of the chair against the body? Because maybe we were sitting in a chair at that time. Why don't we remember how it felt to be wearing clothes at that moment, the feeling of the clothes against our body? Or there's so many things happening. So one way to, I find kind of the working, thinking about conditions is just to kind of like open up and to be aware of, oh yeah, there's a whole range of things here happening. And why is it that I'm choosing to focus on this bit here that's uncomfortable or isn't going the way that I wish that it were? And somehow I'm collapsing the whole experience just into this. So that's maybe something else I'll add on top of that.
Thank you.
David, was that your hand? Okay.
So I was in a group of three, and it was an interesting experience because two-thirds of the group, myself included, weren't really clear on the instructions about what we're supposed to talk about. So the experience of it was not so much observational, but experiential. And that we were sort of working with the discomfort of what are we supposed to do now, and then trying to come to some understanding of that. And it was really we got a consensus, and there was a flow. But it was interesting to kind of, you know, to experience it, not so much to talk about it or reflect on what happened in the past or future, but to actually be living it. So I wonder sometimes if the Dharma is what happens when we're talking about the Dharma, and actually the subject of the Dharma is kind of irrelevant. You could say anything really, but the Dharma is what happens in the background when we're think we're doing something else. It's like that John Lennon line, right? Life is what happens when we're busy making other plans. So anyway, observation.
Very nice. Present moment mindfulness. And I'm sorry if I didn't say the instructions very clearly.
It's cool. It's fine. It worked out well.
Okay. We could have one more if it's short. Okay. So why don't we then take a little break since we've been sitting for a while, and we'll come back at, let's say 5 after the hour in about 10 minutes. So see you then.